Welcome to Sound of Truth Weekly Interview, where we hear about how God is at work in people's lives and in the world today. We're excited you've joined us. Here's our host, Brett Marani.
On this episode of Sound of Truth Weekly Interview, Jeff Christofferson is back. Last week, Jeff shared his personal testimony here on Sound of Truth. So if you didn't get a chance to catch that, I want to encourage you to do so. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about Jeff's book, Once You See. Now, if you're a fiction fan, you're going to love this novel. Even if you are not much into reading Christian fiction or fiction, I want to challenge you to read this book. It is worth your time, just for the entertainment value alone. But there's so much more than that, because in this book, Jeff also shares seven very important lessons for Christians, especially in regard to how we understand the church and our role in it. The last time I read a fictional novel that landed such a strong and important spiritual message was way back in the late 1980s when Frank Peretti helped open so many eyes to the reality of spiritual warfare with his best-selling book, This Present Darkness. In fact, I would love to see Jeff's book, Once You See, rocket to the top of the Christian fiction world, just as Peretti's book did. I'm serious, folks. The message of this book is timely and it is powerful. As the title implies, once you finish reading Once You See, you will have new eyes regarding this issue of how you view God's church and your role in it. And with that as an intro, let's go ahead and get into my interview with Jeff about this wonderful book, Once You See. Welcome back to Sound of Truth, Jeff. Appreciate you coming back on.
It's great to be back.
I know you've mentioned that you had always previously written nonfiction books, but now that you've entered the fictional world, you have stated that you really enjoy the process.
I loved it. In fact, it was the most enjoyable writing I've ever done. I've never felt more led, guided by the Holy Spirit in my life in anything, I don't think, than writing that particular book.
Let's talk about when and why you wrote this book.
The reason I wrote Once You See, kind of the motivation for it, because I wasn't really planning on it, was the pandemic was just starting. We realized something was going on, and we knew about China, and it was hitting Italy and Spain, if you remember, before it got into North America. And a guy named Ed Stetzer and myself did a series of podcasts to kind of help prepare pastors for what was about to come. And we were unprepared for the demand that it would have. Like I think we did six different podcasts, and we had over 10,000 pastors on these things. The demand was crazy. And I just sensed God was saying to me that, because I talk to pastors all the time, and the common refrain I hear over and over is, when God called me into ministry and they'll point in the direction, say it was for this, meaning mostly the time like mission, gospel, that stuff. But I find myself doing, and they point in the opposite direction, all these things, and I'm not doing the thing that God called me to. And I just sense God was saying, this, speak courage, help pastors take advantage of the opportunity that's about to come, because there's going to be a pause button. No one in generations have had the opportunity that everybody's about to have right now. So we did that, and we ended up with 1,600 pastors joined together in cohorts of eight. And we gave them coaching scripts that kind of helped them really think through what is the mission of the church, and how could this be an opportunity for you to lead your church towards the mission of Christ in this moment that we're in. Disappointed at the end of that process that 91% of the 1,600 pastors did nothing, no change. It was homeostasis as quickly as possible. How do we get back to, you know, doing church? And I was just really discouraged. That I was sitting on my my brown recliner and kind of feeling sorry for myself, to be honest. Like, that was a lot of energy for nothing. And I sense God just saying to me, well, Jeff, you've had the joy of seeing what God is doing around the world. You've seen it. You've got to even experience a lot of this yourself. But most pastors haven't. Many pastors are just doing the thing that they know how to do. And so you need to help give them something they can see. And because if you look at the diffusion of innovation, you know, there's only like 14% that can innovate. 70% need a picture. Yeah, so give them a picture. And so that became the motivation for writing this book. I call it a marriage between Patrick Lencioni and John Grisham. Yeah. And so I give a framework at the very front, and I call it Seven Temptations of the Western Church. I give kind of what they are, why they're temptations. They're all seven of them are things that we celebrate, but I think all seven of them are things that kneecap the church. Mm-hmm. And then I give a kingdom corrective. Here's what actually the kingdom says we're supposed to celebrate. And then I weave all seven of those through a storyline that's got three protagonists. It's an African American church in inner city Philly that the pastor has a new vision for engaging their community with the gospel. And the church is against it. And the son is caught up in this new vision with his father, but the church votes it all down and says, no, we just need good expository preaching. And
business as usual.
Thank you very much. Business as usual. And then the second protagonist is a pastor of a Willow Creek style church in the suburbs of Atlanta that had its best years 20 years before.
Yeah, and let me define that, if you don't mind, Jeff. Most of our listeners are not pastors. Yep. And so when you say a Willow Creek style church, what you're referring to is what we would call a seeker-driven church, a church that is high on production and bring your lost friends here where it would be very comfortable for them, mostly a passive experience where they sit and hear great music.
Yep, you describe it perfectly.
A highly effective speaker who's not going to step on any toes. Invite your friends to the show. They'll be introduced to Christianity in a way that is safe for them.
That's perfect. Yep. And so this is a guy that he's a pastor of that. And it really works well as long as there's religious memory in the community. But when that evaporates, you know, the whole thing goes. And so he's really looking for something. And then there's a third protagonist, and that is a law student in Yemen, Muslim law student, who through a series of experiences discovers that religion wasn't satisfying what his heart craved. And he knew of a Christ follower that he went to university with. He ends up leading him to faith, and he joins the underground church, subsequently persecuted for it.
Yeah. Not too many spoilers here. We want to motivate people. People need to buy this book and read it, and not just pastors.
No,
frontline Christ followers need to read this book.
And so he ends up his life in intersecting. And one of these guys, one of these either Philadelphia or Atlanta guys, ends up joining forces, and they see a movement, and the other one wants the results, but doesn't want the price. And he has to go through the meat grinder one more time. Mm. And so that's kind of the synopsis of it. These seven temptations as they work themselves out in that story.
I love this approach of telling a great story and then putting those principles interspersed, woven throughout the story.
I just felt that there needed to be, because there's been an intellectual response to these ideas already. I can't tell you how many books have been written on these ideas. I've written several. and it doesn't seem to be moving the needle. Mm-hmm. And I just sense like there needs to be an emotional, spiritual engagement to these ideas. And that's kind of what my hope was. So not just, you know, give you the whys, but let you feel the difference. And I'm hoping that comes through.
Well, it definitely did for me. And I'm one of the guys who's read so many of those books. And now I'm reading one of your nonfiction books on the topic of ecclesiology, on the doctrine of the church. And really what I would label, and what I've used around here at Harvest Jacksonville, is missional church, as opposed to, I prefer the title, attractional church. As Alan Hirsch was saying 20 plus years ago, most of North American people are not interested in coming to our institutional church meeting on the weekend. And so we have got to take the gospel to them. That is a major shift in thinking for most American, and I suppose North American, Canada as well, Christians, because we've kind of been trained that if you're going to experience Christianity, it comes by being committed to come to our facility on our timetable. And sadly, it's not working, and it hasn't been working for the whole of my lifetime, really. I mean, North American Christianity has been...
And it was never...
Yeah, go ahead.
It was never Christ's intention for the church. And we keep going back to, in many of our minds, we think of the high point of Christianity as the reformers or the Reformation. And so we're looking at the 16th century going on, and we just need to get back to some of that. And really, it was the low point in Christianity, and it was the beginning fixes of it.
Yes.
But it assumed something that is no longer true today, and that is Christendom. It assumed this idea that it was different versions of the same, but the moment that we're in today is the first, second, and third century. It is way more of the Book of Acts than it is the 16th century. And so I think we take our cues from Scripture pretty clearly. We see how the church behaved in the Book of Acts and go, maybe we need to be a little more. In fact, here's a perfect example. I'll offend people here, but when the pandemic came, was coming, I was actually, sounds terrible to say, I was a bit excited, because I came up with a message and a whole theme called We Are Made for This. Because the Church of Jesus Christ in the second century was a pandemic that lasted 15 years long. In the third century was a global pandemic that lasted 12 years long. And in both the cases, the Christians, when the Romans were getting the sniffles, they're kicking their family members out of their houses. They're scared to death of what was about to happen, the plague. And the Christians brought them into their houses, fed them soup, gave them water, and nursed them back to health. And then these people were going, why would you love us when our own families didn't? Mm. And the whole movement just blew up on the back of two pandemics. And I'm going, man, this is our moment. And so I was getting our church. Everybody was sort of becoming pastors of their neighborhood. They were making Facebook groups of their neighborhood saying, let's work this. And I'm going to make sure we're, there's no need there being, going unmet here. Let's figure out how to help one another. And, mm-hmm. and so we were seeing this as a great missional opportunity to engage our neighborhood. I was hoping, this was going to be the response of the church. And I found out later that no, it was going to be our rights are taken away because we can't gather on the Sunday. And I'm going, yeah. And our testimony is getting shot. And I'm going, what in the world has happened? So we missed the big opportunity.
Yeah. And so I was going to join you in offending people with what I was going to say. And you beat me to the punch. This was our missional moment. And instead, we're throwing up our arms in anger that we can't go to our buildings and meet in our huddles together.
Yeah.
And here we are, like you say, we've been forced into a missional moment and we didn't even see it. We couldn't see it. It was more about our creature comforts and our own habits. And it's tragic. And what it revealed to me also, Jeff, again, here I'll tick some people off maybe, but sometimes our Christianity in North America is more about our politics and our own comforts than it is about the gospel of Jesus Christ and taking up our cross daily and denying self and following him.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You used the word ecclesiology. Our ecclesiology showed, how infantile it was, how adolescent it was, because we understand church in two ways. We call it this way. We say a church gathered, the church scattered, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And we've figured out the church gathered, and that's all we know. But when a church is scattered, we had no training. In fact, I prefer the church gathered and the church deployed. That's a better way to look at it. And because there's a purpose to it. And so we had this opportunity to be the church deployed, but we have spent so many decades now just gathering, mm-hmm. And so when we had an opportunity to be deployed, nobody was prepared. No one was equipped. We had no plans. We just knew that if we couldn't get back to gathered soon, we're going to be no church left at all. And that shows something of the lack that we need to begin to think about.
So that's where I think your book is so great, is we really are seeing that the North American Evangelical Church as a whole has a very weak ecclesiology and a very limited ecclesiology. Our doctrine of the church is so much based upon a location, a building, a gathering together for an hour and a half, but we don't seem to have much of a emphasis on the the one, the 99 and the one, we don't seem to be really living out what Jesus emphasized five times at the end of every gospel and at the start of the book of Acts. He gives us a great commission. What can we do? Practically speaking, I guess if you were to write a sequel to Once You See, where would that go? Have you thought about that or of how to help? Is the only hope to rebirth churches or start new churches, or can established churches make a transition toward being what God really intended?
So the only hope is to start new churches, because, and I don't mean to, when I say that, I don't mean to say established churches can't make the transition, because I think established churches can make the transition. And if they do, they're going to birth new churches, because the whole deal, like, think in terms of McDonald's. Their goal is they didn't go and, you know, come into Jacksonville and say, you know, how do we build the biggest McDonald's with the best whatever and get the most people coming to it and whatever. That wasn't even part of their thinking. Their thinking, their measurement of success is selling hamburgers. And so they know to sell hamburgers, they have to put one in the Walmart, they got to put one in the gas station, they got to put one in, you know, and they deploy McDonald's distributors everywhere, and because that's their goal, that's their measure of success. Well, I think with the gospel, we begin to say that the measure of success isn't how many people come and gather to listen. The measure of success is how close can we bring the McDonald's to the customer. And so the shorter we can make that distance, the more the chances of someone hearing the gospel just increase exponentially. And so it's not either or, it's both and. Yes, you can make the transition. And if you make the transition, I think part of the sign of it is you're going to behave entirely differently. And you're going to give yourself away, kingdom idea, for the sake of the good news, which means, you know, giving away your best, mm-hmm. and living with open hands and, you know, all that. And so,
yeah, that's really good. So when I'm reading the book, Once You See, and hearing the story of Philadelphia Freedom, the church plant that is a major part of your story, and I'm hearing about how they're doing things, honestly, I could not help but think Jeff Christofferson has been to Tampa and walked on the if you want to call it the campus, they're part of a shopping mall in Tampa currently. Tampa Underground, one of the co-founders, was on my podcast just a month or two ago, Jeremy Stevens. We had a great conversation about the micro church concept and the multiplication of micro churches throughout the city, meeting needs and not being dependent on buildings or on paid staff necessarily and all that, and just the efficiency of the gospel spreading in this manner. So I'm curious, how much do you know the story of Tampa Underground, and how much of that perhaps was even a model, how much of that perhaps was a model for Philadelphia Freedom?
So I've never been there, but I do know the founder. And so I know Brian. I've never been to Tampa. I've never really even been to any of their things. But that idea, they're everywhere. Not everywhere, but you can go to other places and see smaller versions, bigger versions.
Yeah, they're not the only ones that are doing this.
No, exactly right. And there's been some churches that have been doing it for years and years and years faithfully. And so the idea, every story in the book, like the book is a whole bunch of, you know, stories that make a story. And every story in the book is true.
Oh, interesting.
I've either personally, it's part of my story, or I've got a firsthand relationship with the person who that story is.
Wow. And that really is significant to me in light of having recently read the book, particularly in regard to your character that came out of the 1040 window, out of the Muslim world. Yep. I was wondering how much that came from you having some knowledge of,
I mean,
yeah.
I changed countries and places and whatever, but the story itself is true. In fact, the one, you know, jail cell that I described, I've been in that jail cell in Iraq, and it's called Saddam Parahim, and I describe it exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's they're all true. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that, I mean, again, folks, I really want to encourage everyone to get this book, Once You See, and then come read it and then come back and listen to this episode again here on Sound of Truth Weekly Interview, because that's powerful. That really is powerful. I don't consider myself a person who cries a lot, but Jeff, I mean, I had tears in my eyes a couple times in reading this book. because of the power of the story of the sacrifice, in particular, this one character went through and what he witnessed and what he had to go through. It was just, yeah, it was powerful. And I didn't know if that came from purely your imagination or if, and I, but I had a sense that perhaps this was something that, that you could say, I, you know, names and locations have been changed, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to spoil, but even the...
Okay. We won't say anything more.
The healing.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
The sister and the healing in that story, that was actually something that happened in our own network that we planted here in Toronto. Same disease, same, but yep.
Oh, you know, that's... And, I'm glad you said that because I was really touched by that as well because that's something our church has pursued, prayer, a lot of healing prayer in the last decade. We have really sensed the call of God to pursue that in spite of kind of my doctrinal tribe background. It was never much into that. Okay. Wow. One last question. I made allusion to it a few minutes ago, but have you had thoughts of writing another fictional novel, particularly in this, this particular universe of characters?
I have. And I think, you know, Lord willing, I will. And it's the time. I just don't have time. It takes so much time to write.
Sure.
This. And I'm traveling all the time, but I just pray that I, because the process of writing was like I would get up in the morning. Of course, we were locked down then. I get up in the morning and I would write. And at the end of the day, my wife Laura and I, we call it reading time with Jeff. And I would read what I wrote, and we'd both just have tears running down. Like, where did this come from? Mm. And I would start in the morning, and I knew I had to get my character over here somewhere. And I didn't really have a plan of how it was going to be. And then, like, I just really, it was just a wonderful experience. And I hope people feel that.
Well, I'm not going to pray for another pandemic, but if we have another one, I'm expecting another novel out of you. So, hey, one last just encouraging word to you. When I've completed the book, Once You See, I thought, I don't know what Dallas Jenkins has on his plate after he finishes The Chosen, but I would love to get this book in his hands and have him make a miniseries on Once You See.
Hey, I will give you like $5 if you make that happen.
I thought you were going to say 5%.
Well, okay,
I know a lot of people who know Dallas, but I don't know him personally. So, but I was in the room with him several times in our previous network of relationships. But anyway. So the book is Once You See. Again, I want to encourage all our listeners to jump on Amazon and order a copy, read it, process it, apply it to your life. Jeff, there's an audio copy to this book as well that is available for those who would rather listen to the book.
Yeah, the audio version is incredible. How you do this is you put out part of your manuscript and you have people try out for it. I think I had 16 voices try out for it, and there are several that were very good, but one was incredible. And he's an actor from New York. He's actually involved in an HBO series, and I said, you know, can you do a Yemeni accent that starts off pretty rough and then gradually, you know, changes, or can you do Irish, or can you do he goes, well, no, I can't do this one, but that's why I have an accent coach. He goes, but anyway, he narrates this thing and it's nuts. He does such a good job. You feel like you're in a theater or something.
Wow.
And I was so impressed. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Some of our, my friends they get the Audible version when I recommend a book. So now I'll try this as well. Well, thanks again, Jeff. Really appreciate you coming on here.
All right. Wonderful. It was fun. Thanks, Brad.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sound of Truth Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review it. Also, tell your friends about it. Thanks. Music is by Canon and is used by permission. Sound of Truth is produced in collaboration with Harvest Jacksonville and is copyrighted by Brett A. Morani, 2024.